From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football.
Did you almost say Pac-12?
No, I don't think I was. There was
like a little pause.
Oh.
Like a little glottal stop, almost.
I was trying to follow your cadence there of how you came in. I think I did a pretty good job following along with what you did, follow the leader like we like to do at the start of these shows. You know what we like in our shows to like talk about things? It's not going to happen this show because there's really not much to talk about, but we're going to do a show anyway.
Why would you lead off with that? We have so much to talk about, everyone. So many things. The highs and lows, the ins, the outs, the meaning of it all. That's what you'll get on this show.
We could talk about the Super Bowl. I don't know. All the Big Ten players.
I don't think you're allowed to say that.
Are you not?
The Super Bowl?
Oh.
Are we allowed to say the Super Bowl on this show?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
It's a thing. I don't know.
The Super Bowl.
Are we going to get in trouble?
The Super Bowl.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we are doing a show. You can email us if you got some questions for the offseason because it's going to be, unfortunately, very long offseason. Big10cast@gmail.com. You can also call or text us at 424-532-0678. Tweet us at B1G Podcasts. And we do love the Apple Podcasting app because it's fun. You can leave us a review, a rating. 5 stars are great. If you got Spotify, a lot of people listen on Spotify. Leave us a 5-star rating there for the Podcast of Champions. You're over on Apple. You got one of those iPhones like most of us have. 5-star rating is great, but the reviews are even better because we can give you something for free from Trader Joe's if you have a funny review. So we love the reviews, and we bribe you to leave a 5-star review. It has to be 5 stars, but then you can say something, whatever you want about us, how we're terrible at what we do. You wouldn't be wrong. Do we have any new ones?
We have two new reviews. Okay. One is from Nunya 222. Why I deserve a Trader Joe's gift card. That's a 5-star review.
Okay.
So I don't really watch college football and I don't really like your show. However, I have been stuck listening to you guys every week. I think it's like Frank and I'm and Jim for the past like 3 years during my dad's commute to work. So if I have to get tortured every day, I might as well get something out of it. That's a winner right there.
I was gonna say. Yeah.
Then we have DJ Alexander. The beard and the guy who got lucky on Price is Right. Come for the football talk, stay for the, well, just about everything else. Love it.
Nice.
Good stuff. Nunya's a winner there for sure.
Yeah, Nunya, email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. We'll send you a free Trader Joe's gift card. I don't know about lucky. I had some skill on the Price is Right, you know? I mean, there was luck involved, but there's skill too. You got to be sharp about it.
Sure.
You got to be smart. I used to be smart. Back in the day, I was a smart person at one point in my life. Well, I don't know what happened. I started doing sports.
And it just you just got to, you know, start talking in like the second person for some reason all the time. You know, you just got to. Yeah.
It's rough. I think you're getting old, too.
Do you find yourself writing worse the more you write about sports? Like, do you start adopting like sports, like language colloquialisms that are all bad English?
Because that's what sounds right.
Yeah. Because it's sports talk, so you got to write like it's sports talk.
It sounds like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very true. But yeah, thank you for the reviews, and I have a couple gift cards still to send out. But
Nunya, like as in Nunya Business.
Nunya Business. Email me ryan@uscfootball.com, and I will send you a Trader Joe's gift card. We love John and Brea, so thanks.
We do love John and Brea. I love John and Brea.
His generosity
knows no bounds.
No, he's great.
And, a man of men.
A man of men who sends us gift cards. I was going through, I was picking out getting a hat, and I found one of the old Pac-12 jockey hats. I was like, oh, so sad. Everything, the Pac-12 jockey stuff sort of depresses me because I loved it. But it's sad that it just doesn't really exist. So I usually put it in my Salvation Army pile, what I find.
Do you remember when we insulted Jockey and we just talked about there being like an underwear company? Yeah. And then that's what turned into a like lucrative for me because I still wear the underwear.
I got, yeah, I'm wearing some right now, I think.
Apparel sponsorship for this very show.
Yes, that was great. They like wrote to us and were like, hey, by the way, we do more than underwear. Because it was like the Pac-12 just announced, if you don't remember, Pac-12 announcing these deals, like, you know, the SEC is like, oh, you know, we have Lamborghini or something, whatever. It wasn't that. But, and then the Pac-12 was, you know, saying, oh, we have a apparel deal with Jockey. Or like, okay, so it's like Yogi Roth going to be wearing underwear on camera. What's going on here? But then they wrote us, one of the representatives, Tom, wrote us and told us about, hey, we used to represent Babe Ruth and all these like big, not a lot of guys, but a lot of bigger name athletes over the years. And then they started sending us gift cards and free gear. And then we started talking about Jockey all the time. So that was a lot of fun.
We love Jockey.
Go
to Jockey, buy some stuff.
You'd be good at trivia. Do you ever do trivia, like bar trivia? I think you'd be good
at it. Yeah, I crush trivia.
Okay.
You know me.
I would, like, a friend needed a sub and I played last week and we ended up winning and you get some free beer or whatever. And then it was played last night. It was a little tougher, but there was like a sports, they weren't sports people. So there was like a logos of, so I crushed all that. So I got all those for them, but we didn't end up winning last night, but on the TV, they had like the Pac-12 network at this Barley.
You can't even get on the Pac-12 network anymore.
I had no idea. So, you know, there's like, there's two women that were talking about, it was sort of like, if we stuck around to the Pac-12, like they could have put our show on TV, you know, but it was, I forget who they were, but two like kind of reporters that would talk about the Pac-12 and they were showing like old football games and stuff. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. I'm sitting at a bar on February 3rd, you know, in Redondo Beach and the Pac-12 network is on and they're showing some old games and stuff. It was just really bizarre. I'm like, where was this one when the league was together? I don't know. Yeah. Like, when could this just be on at a bar randomly? It just, that wasn't the case.
No.
We do got a big game this weekend. I know it doesn't involve the Big Ten, but the Super Bowl. And it's finally here. It's not just the biggest game of the year. It's the ultimate betting event. If you're not on my bookie, you're leaving money on the table. Super Bowl betting isn't just about picking the winner anymore. My bookie has all those wild props. You love all those props, all the ones you can imagine. I'm taking everything from the opening coin toss to Gatorade pouring on the winning coach, orange, blue, even the national anthem, halftime show up for grabs. You can bet on everything over at MyBookie. And what really sets MyBookie apart? They make it easy to win and get paid from crypto to credit. You've got bonuses of every type of deposit you can get back just for playing through their new loyalty program over at MyBookie. Bet on the biggest stage with boosted parlays, live betting, jackpots. Turn small bets into huge payouts, fast, easy signups, lightning fast payouts. This is where winners play. So make sure you go over to MyBookie, use promo code POC to get hooked up with a bonus to get you started. So go to MyBookie, promo code POC. You want to put a bunch of bets on the Super Bowl. Should be a lot of fun. I can't wait to start watching it. The side bets are the best thing for me, David. But go over to MyBookie, promo code POC for that bonus. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
Absolutely beautiful read.
Thank you, sir. Do you like prop bets at all?
Sure.
Yeah, and in the stuff. I used to do a Super Bowl party in Vegas, and they would do this. Like, squares were a thing, but they had a Super Dollar game where you, like, you had a it was like a draft before, and there were different categories, like first down for Kansas City, first downs for Philly. So whenever, if you and I got paired up and I drafted first down Kansas City, you drafted first down Philly gets a first down, I have to give you a dollar. And then they get another first down, I give you a dollar. You go back and forth. So you try to avoid the first down ones, but there's like turnovers and touchdowns and things like that. And there's $1 that's a Super Dollar, and you have to trade that if you have it. So that bops around the room. And at the end of the quarter or whatever, you get extra money if you have the Super Dollar. So it was a kind of a fun game for a big, you know, you got like 30 people in the room.
Sounds kind of mindless. Yeah, people don't have to really pay attention too much to like participate.
The first, yeah. So when you draft, don't draft first downs because you have to play more when there's first downs. You
right.
know? And then we had like former like SIDs in the room. So when you score a touchdown, it's like a first down, and they're like, "That's a first down." Also, we're like, "No, it's not." Like, "Yes, it's a first down." You know. So there's like little things like that going on. We're off the rails already, huh?
You're off the rails. I am keeping it together. I am Captain Composed.
Yeah. So what should we go through our biggest stories of the past week or so first and then
yes,
get
please.
Into some of the smaller ones?
Please. Okay. There were so many big items of news. Look, did we make this show entirely for an ad read? No. No. That would be putting it a little strong. 90%.
So if you guys are familiar with my co-host here, Mr. David Woods, has strong feelings about things and sometimes people. And one of those peoples that he has strong feelings for used to be the head coach of UCLA. And turned out that he left that job.
Are we talking about Carl Durrell?
No. There's a lot of head coaches for UCLA.
Rick Neuheisel?
That you don't really care for. But this one, he sort of takes your cake, I think.
Yeah.
Leaves for Ohio State to become the offensive coordinator there for Ryan Day, who used to play for him. And, you know, in full, like, just sort of, like, teasing you fashion, like, loses that close one to Oregon, inexplicably loses to Michigan where they don't use all their best players. And then David could kind of sit back like, aha, see, things didn't work out so well for Chip Kelly. Mr. Chip Kelly going to Ohio State. But then they get to the playoffs and just start thumping everybody, and he wins a national championship. And now he's off to Vegas, place that we love.
To continue at the knee of Peter Carroll.
Pete Carroll. Crazy to be the offensive coordinator. And fairly well compensated at about $6 million per year. So I'm sure you have some mixed feelings for your boy, Chip Kelly.
I hope nothing but the worst for Chip Kelly. He's a scumbag.
Okay.
And he has arrived where he wanted to arrive starting in November of last year, which is an NFL offensive coordinator job. Ohio State was a stepping stone for him because that's all he wanted. He wanted to be back in the NFL where he didn't have to do any other part of the job besides the only part of the job he enjoys, which I guess for most people, more power to you. It's just, I would think for most people, you have some degree of, I don't know, self-respect, something to continue doing the job you have while you are, you know, looking around for another one. And no, I'm not talking about like an hourly employee at McDonald's. You spit in the food. I don't care. Chip Kelly was making $6 million a year at UCLA and wasn't doing his goddamn job.
Yeah.
Then he goes to Ohio State. I don't know. The offense improved. It was, you know, hard to be a lot worse considering the talent they had. And then, you know, they gacked that game away against Michigan. I would say their defense largely carried them. But, you know, the offense was pretty good in the playoffs. And then he moves on immediately. You got a national title out of it. So I'm sure Ohio State fans are, you know, feeling fine, more or less. But, no, he's a scumbag. He's a guy who's, you know, just out for number one. And good riddance. Hope he struggles and fails.
So you're... Wow. I've always liked Chip Kelly. I've had some... You know, brief conversations with
him. I'm sure he's a great guy to drink like 12 Coronas with.
I had a couple Coronas with him.
Yeah.
But yeah. But moving on, it's weird for Ohio State to now have to replace both coordinators. Obviously, a lot of that talent that stuck around for one more year, sort of similar to what Michigan went through, the talent drain. But Ohio State does keep their head coach, so Ryan Day sticking around, just have to replace both coordinators where Jim Harbaugh left. So I'm curious to see. I don't think Ohio State's going to have much of a step back, not like what Michigan did. Yeah, there's a lot of talent to replace, but the way they've recruited, it'll be interesting to see spring portal and all that, what Ohio State does and where they go with the coordinators. You know, to lose Jim, you know, Jim Knowles was, you know, there were some issues there, like his personalities, conflictions or whatever that were, you know, conflicting going on. And then Chip Kelly, you know, Ryan Day was calling plays too. So I don't think either one of those is going to be, you know, insurmountable, but there, you know, some reloading to do for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of money, so I'm sure they're going to be heavy in the transfer portal. And then they'll also, you know, they're going to pay top dollar for coordinators. So I think they're going to be fine. I mean, it's not like they're going to drop off immensely. I think Michigan, when they were doing their transition, they were caught in a bit of a transitional period for, like, the overall program. You know, Jim Harbaugh to a new head coach. And then also, it seems like there was a shift in their NIL approach maybe in the last like 12 months that didn't necessarily make its biggest impact this past season, but may going forward. So they were in kind of a transitional period. I think Ohio State's got its, you know, that machine is rolling. It's not like they had a talent deficit before. And I think they've kind of figured out, you know, all that goes into being a major NIL power. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few programs in the country where you can just see, okay, they're going to be elite in perpetuity as long as, you know, things don't completely fall apart and there's some huge scandal or something. Ohio State, Georgia, Oregon, you know, and you know, everyone else I think is in some sort of, you know, not a tier below, but in a, you know, maybe not quite as secure a spot. You know, Alabama, new head coach, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Ohio State, Georgia, and Oregon seem extremely well positioned with the way they operate NIL wise.
Yeah, like maybe not a national title next year for Ohio State, but like not.
They're gonna be at worst 10-2 in the regular season again, and you know, an elite team.
Yeah, Alex says, talk about Dave's nightmare blunt rotation together at the Raiders.
I am really interested to see the interaction between Chip Kelly and Pete Carroll, because I don't think there are two more, you know, they're both kind of psychopaths in their own way, but they're very dissimilar people. You have like super outgoing, like, you know, rah-rah Pete Carroll, and then you have, you know, I won't call him cerebral because that's giving him too much credit. But, you know, just kind of a much more internal person and, you know, just a dick in Chip Kelly.
Nice. You want to move over a little bit, David?
What is going on with your camera setup? Because I'm also getting like side profile too.
Okay. I don't know. Dave always complains about the free setup I have for him here, but
whatever,
that's okay.
Man.
Matthew says, I think the possibility of upgrading at OC is higher than DC. And there's talk about, you know, Ryan Day calling plays again. I don't think he will, but it'll be interesting to
see.
They
can't upgrade off of DC because I think it was quite literally they had the best defense in the country this year by several different metrics. So I don't think you upgrade at DC, and it'll be hard to upgrade at OC too. I mean, they had a top five-ish offense this year after being, I think it was top 25 or so the previous year. So, yeah, I mean, I think they can maintain. I think getting a whole lot better would be challenging, especially there's changeover. There's going to be turnover, you know, offensively. Now, obviously, they returned Jeremiah Smith and all that, but there's going to be turnover. I think if they can just simply maintain as like a top 10 offense and a top 5 defense, they're going to be totally fine.
Yeah. Washington sort of involved in this too, losing its two coordinators. So Steve Belichick goes to join his dad in the ACC.
And take over for him in July of next year before his dad coaches a game?
Maybe. I don't know.
Did you see the like buyout terms? He only has to pay a buyout through July if he wants to go find another job, Bill.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. Did the New Orleans Saints hire anyone yet? That was the only job that was open before. I'm not sure.
What league is that?
That's
is that the NFL?
That is.
Oh, yes. Wow. Who knew?
Yeah. But also, Pete Carroll's son, Brennan Carroll, he's gone. So he's going to the Raiders as well. So he's joining his dad again.
Aww.
Yeah, but former...
Don't you just love nepotism? Isn't it the best?
It's pretty awesome. Was it Jimmy Doherty, I believe, was promoted. He was at UCLA.
Yes, once upon a time.
Back in the day. I'd met him as well. He was very nice person. But I believe I saw that he was promoted. I don't know if you can confirm that or not. But yeah, so little coordinator action movement in Seattle. So
yes, he was promoted.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he play at Arizona? I forget where.
He played at Missouri. He was a quarterback there. He coached at Arizona with Fish after leaving UCLA in 2020.
Okay. That was the one. So he was.
So he's been with Fish now since 2021. I would imagine this will be like an understudy type deal where Jed Fish will be handling like a lot of the offensive stuff, and this will be a, you know, kind of learning thing for Jimmy.
Gotcha.
Because he's been the passing game coordinator, but that in a lot of ways ends up just being a title for guys.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, he's been a QB coach, so he's getting, you know, he's moving up in the world.
Nice. Forgot to mention we are live on our YouTube channel, so we got some sickos that are in there. Appreciate that. If you have questions that you want us to talk about, you can just put question in there. I'll start. We'll get back to it a little bit later. The other sort of news this is kind of a topic I wanted to discuss with you, David, mm-hmm. is spring games, which...
I know you love them, baby.
Well,
this news was probably very disappointing for you then.
Yeah, stocks aren't up for spring games. It's like the NVIDIA thing happening. Like, it's just going down. Like, I think they were very high before, like NVIDIA, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone was big into spring games. Me would watch them all on the Pac-12 network back in the day. Alas. There are some places where, I don't want to say, I mean, if there's not a lot going on in your college town and you have a spring or your whole state and there's a spring game and thousands of people come out for them and it's like an event, you know, that's cool. Like, that doesn't really happen when we're here in LA. You get some people, but it's not something that people drive across the state to go see usually. Nebraska was one of those places. I mean, back in the day, like the whole reason I started podcasting in like 2008, like Nebraska had something to do with it. I don't know if they ever told you this. But if you were doing, I was doing a lot of radio. USC was good at the time, like in the mid-2000s or whatever. And I'd get calls from sports radio stations all over the country about talking USC football in the spring, whatever. They were doing their countdowns of like spring football, whatever it was. And I'm like, but it was really hard to get on local LA radio because they're talking Lakers or Dodgers or whatever. It was more of a pro sort of town. And that's kind of mm-hmm. why I started the podcast. But Nebraska was one of those places where I was on, I mean, I was on Nebraska radio like all the freaking time talking about, I mean, they care about this stuff all year long. And the spring game, they get like 65,000 people that come out for it. And Matt Rhule is now talking about potentially getting rid of the spring game because it's sort of a showcase for other programs to look at your roster and scout your team and say, oh, that wide receiver is good. Let's give him a call and, you know,
so
tamper.
I've been a big fan of Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
But I'm concerned that there is very limited brain activity inside of his skull. Because there is a transfer portal window in April. But do you know when it ends? Before anyone is scheduling a goddamn spring game.
Yeah.
Nobody can take your players after the end of April. They can't. This is not a real thing. That's not a real excuse. The reason he doesn't want to have a spring game is probably somewhere in his skull. It probably has something to do with typical coach paranoia and not this nonsense. But he might be one of those guys who's just trying to point at the newfangled thing and saying that's the problem. I would imagine this is just typical coach paranoia where it's, I don't want to show anyone anything because then they can scout me based off a spring game 4 months before we actually play a competitive game, which is also stupid, but that's typical coach paranoia. I don't know why he made up this other bit because he is just making stuff up to say things. But that's also kind of stupid. So I'm a little concerned he's stupid. My overarching concern, and this is mostly for you, is that this could start a trend of coaches deciding that this is the way to go with spring games. I'm really interested to see if springs are open in a lot of places. I'm interested to see if UCLA's is open the way it has been. I'm interested to see if a lot of these places are open, because that's been kind of the thing. So olden times, practices were open most places. Like, nobody was getting that paranoid about it, the whole thing. Right. Then they started to close them throughout the 2000s. UCLA was still open pretty late. But UCLA's in-season practices have been closed for a long time now. You get like 20 minutes of access, the whole thing. But spring was always a time of like, okay, let's get fans out there. Let's watch some practices. Let's do that whole thing. And that's been common in a lot of places. I'm wondering if that's going to shift too now. Again, because coaches are paranoid and crazy. And I'm hoping this isn't the start of that, because I do think this is a good opportunity for if you're at a school that's actually interested in football, to get like younger fans out to practices and out to the spring game, to get like autographs and do all that kind of stuff that, you know, makes kids excited and like some very strange adults excited. But otherwise, it's whatever. I'm hoping they don't just completely limit this for stupid coach paranoia reasons. But anyway, long story short, Matt Rhule's explanation and excuse makes absolutely no sense if you look at a recruiting calendar.
No, I agree with you. I feel like you're asking a lot more of fans now than you were before. I think it's more difficult to be a fan, and now they're asking you to pay like money so you can keep players or acquire players, and they're asking a lot of the fans. So you would rather not take away things like spring games where you could take your kids and take photos and get autographs and things like that. I think you'd rather, you know, you want to expand the sort of benefits to being a fan and not restrict them or not reduce them. And I feel like that's where we're going with this stuff. I mean, why there was just a lot of cool memories and a lot of cool stories I would hear from people, that went to USC practices in the fall, you know, like game weeks, and they would go and watch practice. And, Pete Carroll still won a lot of games. And, he wasn't paranoid about that. But most coaches are now, and there's more and more restrictions. And I think allowing fans to sort of reach out and high five players as they're leaving the field, whatever it is, there's a lot of cool things that you could be doing. And it just seems like it's becoming so insular. And it's like, we're in this bubble and we'll come out for the games and then we're going to go back in and you know, we'll put out social media posts and that's it. And I think you're alienating a lot of the fans, and I any opportunity you have to sort of bring them into the fold, I think you should do it. And spring games have just been traditionally one of those times when you can. And I hate to see the trend being that they're sort of going away.
Yeah, I don't know how correlated. I mean, I don't think there's any correlation between being particularly open or particularly closed and success. I think it's all like, I think it comes down to, again, and I know this sounds insulting, and if you're a PE teacher out there, I feel, you know, I'm not insulting you, but they're really, really overpaid gym teachers, and so they need to assign more importance to the thing they're doing, because I think there's probably some deep-seated insecurity about getting paid $6 million a year to coach gym class. And so I think they need to treat it like it's a matter of national security, whether you see whether they're running a swing pass out of this formation or not, you know, whether they like to run an RPO out of trips, whatever. Like, it's they need to treat that like it's okay. That's life or death. And so I think you're going to see this more and more unless schools need to empower their sports information departments to actually be entities again. I think in a lot of places, there is absolutely no control from the administration over the football program, like with these administrative details. Obviously, they have oversight over compliance and all that.
Right.
But the stuff that's like, no, this is bad for the business of our school, bad for the business of our football program to not have access to these things, to not allow fans out to these things, to not be present for fans. But there needs to be somebody guiding that. And I know, like at UCLA, the SID department has gotten much more subservient to the coaches in a lot of ways. And I think that's a shift. And I'm not blaming anybody individually, but that's a shift from 20 years ago.
Yes.
Where it was much more, you sometimes have to tell the head coach what to do. And you have to tell him, no, you got to be on this thing. This is important. And I think with football especially, it's kind of shifted.
Yeah, the coach has all the power there.
Yeah.
And I've seen the same sort of thing happen. You know what's interesting too is I think one of the trends or one of the, what you know people were expecting a trend to be with players getting more compensation and salaries going up and all of that, that they felt like, well, the money's got to come from somewhere. So coaches' salaries are going to probably go down. Are you going to get the $10 million a year? And then we've seen, you know, I know USC paid a lot of money for Danton Lynn. He's over $2 million to stay at USC because, you know, Penn State came in trying to hire him away. Penn State goes and gets Jim Knowles and pays him more than $3 million a year for a coordinator. So maybe these are going to be, there's some extreme cases, but Danton Lynn's been, this is 2 years as a defensive coordinator. I don't know. I really felt like, okay, maybe coaches' salaries will come down, but it just seems like nothing's going down. It's like real estate at the beach. It's just never going to go down.
I think there's an exhaustion level that's got to be coming because how they're doing that is basically offloading all of the costs for personnel onto fans to pay.
Yeah.
And like there's a level at which a lot of these schools have rich people who are willing to do that. But when an NFL or baseball or professional sport, they own a team, they get benefits from it.
Yeah.
Like these guys are getting the same benefits they've always gotten. They get to ride on the private plane to the games with the team and they get to do all this stuff. But instead of paying, you know, the $200K a year that they get a tax write-off on, now they're paying $1 million into the pockets of players. And it's just, I wonder if it gets to a point where it's just people are kind of just done with that. But it doesn't seem to be arriving as quickly as I would have thought. And I think there's, you know, I think sports for everyone, whether you're, you know, paying $0 and sitting at home on your couch or paying $1 million and funding half the team, it's an escape from reality. It's a little bit of that, you know, we've talked about that before where like the way your brain works when you're thinking about sports, it's very different from, you know, kind of how it thinks when you're just operating your day to day. And I think it provides this like, you know, thing that scratches some, you know, primordial itch in your brain, allows you to think of, you know, competitive, violent like things without, you know, being a cast off to society. But I think there's a limit when that starts to really punch into reality more and more. And that's when you start impacting people's money. I guess it's just I'm really kind of surprised that salaries keep going up and up and up and up in the way that they are. And it feels like there's a bubble that is going to burst at some point. And I don't think it's going to be pretty at all.
The novelty of like paying players, maybe that's, I don't know how long that can go, but is it a 10-year thing? Like say you're some booster and you were like, you said $1 million. Like I'm pitching in $1 million for the roster. And you do it for first couple of years. It's like, wow, this is cool. Like that safety that came in, like, I helped bring him
in.
Are
all these universities, like, it's kind of shocking because they all do have math departments. Are they all bad at math? Are they all bad at accounting?
I think
because here's the thing. Like, I'm looking at the economics of this and, like, the TV deals and all that kind of stuff. And, yes, there are probably a few athletic departments that will still make some money, right? But by and large, every athletic department is not going to be balancing its books.
No, I think Ohio State lost like $30 million or something.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, the university is having to make these abstract calculations about, okay, our football program being very good, how much value does that bring in applications, in monetary value, all these sorts of things. And so if you're making purely rational choices, you have to do it that way. I think they're counting – I think part of this is not all choices are rational, and even at the administrative level, even at the economics level, even at the like broad leadership levels, people make irrational choices because they are fans or they are into it or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just – this can't go on. Like it's just – I mean it's – all of these universities are going to be having to bail out their athletic departments on an annual basis.
Yeah.
I mean, UCLA finally started giving money to its athletic department. But like UCLA was one of the last schools I knew that was prioritizing balancing its own books on the athletic department scale. Who yeah. else is? Nobody else cares.
Maybe in the revenue share, and there's all kinds of like still lawsuits and things going on. Maybe the rev share gives you a little extra boost. But I'm talking about that guy that gives $1 million the first couple of years, he's into it. Like in year eight, if he's if he's doing $1 million a year, is that person, he or she, still like, what the hell am I doing? Why am I giving $1 million every year to this stuff? Like I think some of that's going to drop off, and you lose some of those people, then I don't know if there's new ones to come in and do it. But I think there's going to be some fatigue.
Well, and there's also like, okay, you do that for a couple of years. But say you're not at Ohio State where you just won a national title. Say it's Tennessee's boosters, right? And so they're funding it at like a whatever, they're paying $12 million a year, something like that. I don't know. I'm just throwing a number out there. And all you get out of it is a first round playoff berth in a 12-team playoff, and then you're bounced. And you do that 2 years in a row, and then it's like, I'm not even getting anything out of this.
Yeah.
I'm not even getting the, like, I thought I was given $1 million and I was going to see a natty. I'm given $1 million and I'm seeing the same Tennessee team I saw like throughout most of the early 2000s. What's going on here?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know exactly what kind of economic fraud scheme this is. Like, it doesn't sound exactly like a Ponzi scheme. But it is something where people are being convinced to give money into something that has absolutely no ROI for them. And very, like, even if you consider the ROI being an emotional return, right? It's an extremely risky bet.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you're given, you know, $1 million and you're being told, yeah, we get this quarterback, we're going to be, you know, gangbusters, and then you're not gangbusters. I don't know, man. I mean, the whole thing is messed up.
It's pretty messed up.
And it doesn't really function right. And the schools should be paying the players. But the economics are just not there. Like, if you look at these TV deals, it's not an NFL deal. Like, it's not at that level. And it's the rosters are a lot bigger. And something's got to give. You can't keep paying coaches NFL head coach money or greater. And then also pay the players and do that all from the same amount of money.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't work.
Matthew says a big part of Ohio State's situation is that they had less home games this year. They still lost a lot of money. Mark says that that Ohio State has 36 sports. Stanford has a couple more, I think. Cuts are going to need to be made at this point. Yeah, I think – I mean – there's a lot of changes happening, and there's all these different, the House settlement, the people going against it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and we're counting down to July when this is all supposed to like kick in, and what are the rules going to be and all that. I think universities are going to have to subsidize the athletic departments more than traditionally, right, David? Like even scholarships, like you want to keep some of those sports going, and that you're asking the athletic department to pay for them. The universities might have to start, you know, pitching in for some of those. So a lot of that stuff is changing, which I don't think that's bad. Like you talked about it. Like, you know, Alabama as an institution over the last 20 years has become, you know, applications are through the roof, and it's become a better like academic institution in large part because of the success of the football team. And it became very popular to go there, and you know, nothing helps your school more than getting a bunch more people that want to go there, and then you can be more selective and all that. So I think the athletic departments add something to a lot of the universities, but it seemed like for years and years, the universities just weren't, they're keeping it this separate deal. And I think now if the universities want to keep that going and you want to keep all those Olympic sports going, the university itself is probably going to have to be a bigger contributor.
Yeah, I agree.
One other thing too, you know, it seems like I was listening to the Yahoo Sports podcast. I like those guys. Ross Dellinger does a great job on all this crazy stuff that's going on that you all hate. But one of the things was, if you remember, Florida State and Clemson suing the ACC, trying to get out of there. Well, it looks like now they've got a new deal with ESPN, and it seems like they'll give more money to some of the bigger brands and all that. Notre Dame is going to have a deal where every year they'll play at least Miami, Florida State, and Clemson. They'll play two of those three teams every year. So I think they're trying to set this up. If you keep the ACC together, it seems like everything else is going to be, you know, nothing's going to break apart in the at least foreseeable future, next 5 years or so. So we might be over the whole realignment stuff, but that's something that I thought was interesting.
Can somebody clip that for me? The part where Ryan says we're over the realignment thing. I just want to have that.
I'm saying it's a possibility. Uh-huh. Like, it seems like that's something that could happen.
Sure.
Who knows? Tomorrow it all gets blown up. But yeah. But there's been a lot of talk with the travel. I think, I don't know if you're familiar with UCLA's basketball team, but there's a coach called Mick Cronin that has complained about seeing the Statue of Liberty too many times, things like that. You know, Cal and Stanford, like their poor Olympic sports teams are just flying all over the place. I don't know. Is it enough to like want people want to fix it? I mean, there's a lot of problems with especially with the Olympic sports traveling, but I don't know. You are always a big proponent of these national conferences and not regional, right?
Like, it's so true. I think it just works so much better. It's really good for everyone involved.
Yeah. Very nice. Oh, so someone clipped it. Perfect. We'll see. But there's a possibility if Florida State and Clemson aren't going anywhere, there could be some more stability, which probably means there won't be.
Correct.
All right. Well, why don't we take a quick break and we'll do some questions. Back in a minute, everyone. Alrighty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. We talked for like 40 minutes.
Wow.
That's pretty good, huh?
Too many.
Do you want to do one of the emails?
Yeah. Okay. I will read Bob's.
Okay.
Two questions. Hey, y'all. It's Bob from SF, formerly of Alaska. I know it's been a few years since I've sent in a question, but no worries. I've been a loyal listener these past few years. I had to submit this question because I want to irritate Ryan after he said in the last podcast that, quote, this is a football podcast.
It is.
So here's the question for David, since this is the offseason. How far do the Bruins need to go in March Madness this year to satisfy the majority of UCLA fans? I'm thinking most people would be content with a Sweet 16 berth and happy with anything past that. All right. Let's start with that one. There's a second question, too.
Okay.
I think Sweet 16 is probably the floor for contentedness from the fan base.
Wow.
Last year, UCLA missed the NCAA tournament. They reloaded with a bunch of transfers. And I think given the way they're playing the last five games, I think people want to see them make at least a second weekend run in March. Especially if they finish the year strong and end up with a pretty decent seed. So I think, yeah, I think your read is right, Bob. I think people want to see at least a Sweet 16. Now, will some people be disappointed if it's only a Sweet 16? For sure. But I think at that level, you don't get people who are, you know, getting pitchforks and, you know, the whole thing. Second question. Also, since this is a, quote, football podcast and also the offseason, could you rank all 18 Big Ten mascots in order of who would win in a fight to the death? I apologize if someone has already asked this question earlier and I didn't pay attention. RIP, Mike Leach. All right. Okay. So
we've tried this a bunch.
No. We're going to do it now.
We're going to do it?
Yeah. All right. So we've got Bruins. We've got Trojans. We've got Huskies. We've got Ducks. We've got Cornhuskers. We have Hawkeyes. We have Badgers. We have Golden Gophers. We have Wolverines. We have Spartans.
Yeah.
We have Buckeyes. That's a nut. We have Hoosiers. We have Boilermakers. Who else we got?
Okay, so...
We got Terrapins. We've got Nittany Lions. Right. We've got Scarlet Knights.
Okay, let's categorize...
Who else we got?
I got a list. Got them all in front of me.
All right, we need two more. What are they?
Oh, there's a Wildcat, Duck, Husker, Sparty, Badger, Gopher, Buckeye, Hawk, Herky the Hawk, Harry the Husky.
Dude, why are you doing that? We're doing are we doing the names or are we doing the like actual physical mascot?
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, like the
name. Because some of them don't have mascots. Some of them don't have physical mascot.
Okay.
But you're not going to give me the... You weren't even listening, so now I got to go through and figure out which one I didn't have. Good God.
I was looking at the mascots themselves.
Okay, I need Illini. That's the one I was missing.
Illini, okay.
Okay, all right, so let's do this. All right, obviously bottom is the Buckeyes because you would just be choking on it, right? Well, choking on a Buckeye, that's a possibility. All right, so that's not bottom. Terrapin. Terrapin's not beating anything, and it could choke on the Buckeye, right?
Sure.
All right, so Terrapin is at the bottom. Terrapin's not fighting anything, not winning. All right.
I mean, a duck's got to be down there.
Okay, a duck, but a duck can get away from a terrapin.
Right, but right? I'm not saying it's below, but...
But it can fly away or just, like, walk at a, like, reasonable pace away from a terrapin, correct?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll go ducks. They're second to last, but they could also choke on a Buckeye.
They could choke on a Buckeye, yeah.
Right. next up, do we have to go Buckeye now?
We don't have to.
I mean, everyone could choke on a Buckeye, but I think as we get into the more violent animals, they could.
No, I mean,
step on it or
yeah.
Okay, all right. So Buckeye's next. Okay. All right. Now we're getting into some stuff. All right. Because a lot of these are just different types of human.
Right. There's a lot of humans. I was going to say there's a lot of humans.
I'm going to go. What do you think about gopher next?
Yeah. Gophers aren't the. Yeah.
They're not the most violent animals. Badger is sneaky violent. Like badger will mess you up.
No, badgers are tough. Like they're like wolverines and badgers. Like they're, I mean, wolverines better, tougher than a badger, but.
All right. Let's compare. All right.
What's the weakest human?
I think it's a cornhusker.
What, the Boilermaker guy? Like, they're probably...
Yeah, but they're working, like, I'm picturing a guy in, like, you know, like, shoveling coal or something.
Okay.
Now, that's not a Boilermaker. That's, like, somebody who actually, like, throws coal in a boiler. But, you know, you gotta be able to work with your hands. A Cornhusker, like, you're just in a, like, you're just doing this, right?
But if you have, like,
no, that's a corn shucker. What's a corn husker?
If you got the big Sith thing or whatever, like the...
Scythe.
Scythe? What is it? Oh, the Sith is the...
The Sith is thing. The... Yeah, it's opposite Scythe, of Jedi. Yes.
So all right. That's a pretty bad weapon.
Well, and then we've also got Illini and Hoosiers. Okay, Hoosiers. Hoosiers are next.
Yeah.
They're the weakest of the men.
What about the Purdue? Like, no, that's a Boilermaker. Okay.
All right. So, all right. Now, next on the... I think it's either corn huskers... what's a Hawkeye? Isn't that a... What is that?
I mean, I think...
Is like, it just like the hawk's eye?
I mean, a hawk can fly and stuff. I think that's...
But are we going hawks? Like, they're not the hawks. They're the Hawkeyes.
It's Herky the Hawk is the mascot.
Okay, whatever. But, fine. All right.
It's like a cartoony bird, but...
Okay. All right. But, so next up, I'm going to go with the Cornhuskers after Hoosiers.
Okay.
Then we can go Boilermakers.
Okay.
I guess we go Illini next because I'm going to go like maybe it's not just like a random resident of Illinois, but like somebody who was, you know, back in the like the 17th century. And
I don't know. They have like ranged weapons. So
yeah, like, was able to do some ranged weaponry. So we'll go Illini after the Boilermakers. But I still don't think, like, does a 17th century Illini, do they match up against a Spartan well? I don't know. Spartans were wearing, like, some armor.
The Spartans and Trojans, like, they're going to be, like, about the same, I would think, right?
Yeah, I would think they'll, well, so actually they wouldn't be the same because the Spartans
defeated Troy.
Went to Troy and beat the shit out of them.
Yeah, so they're, okay, so.
Okay, but here's the thing. Yeah. Are any of these better than Wolverines, Badgers, so on and so forth? I think next is Wolverines.
I think Badgers.
You think Badgers?
I think Wolverine's tougher than a Badger.
You think so? Okay, yeah. So Badgers after Illini. So a Badger, we're saying, here's what we're saying.
I think if you have a sword,
a pissed off Badger kills an Illini.
Yeah.
Okay.
But not a Spartan.
Okay, got it. All right, so are we doing Wolverines next?
I think.
After Badgers?
I think, yeah.
Okay. All right, next up, we've got Hawkeyes. All right, so here's what we have left, everyone, just because you're paying attention at home. Bruins, Trojans, Huskies, Hawkeyes, Spartans, Lions, Nittany Lions, Scarlet Knights, and the Wildcats.
So we got to, like, so which people with swords would defeat which animals that are left?
So I think a Wildcat probably is the weakest link here.
Okay.
Well, maybe Husky. What do we think?
Oh, yeah, Husky. Yeah, Husky.
Husky's next. Okay.
Husky, Wildcat.
We think a Wildcat beats a Husky? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Now we have Lions. I think those are mountain lions of some sort.
Yeah, I'm going to put those above the people.
You're going to say they're stronger than all of the people?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Here's what I would say. I would say it's Trojans next. Wait, what about the Hawkeyes? What about the bird?
I don't even know what that's like. Herky the Hawk. Let's put the Hawk there.
All right, Hawkeye's next. All right, here's what we're going to go with. Trojans next.
Yeah.
Then Spartans. And then we got to go Scarlet Knights because.
You think Scarlet Knights above Spartans?
Because they've got full armor.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's fair.
Then are we going, well, no, well, then if they've got full armor, all right, we're going Nittany Lions after Spartans, and then we are going Scarlet Knights.
Okay. I like that.
Okay. All right. And then as always, it's your UCLA Bruins,
the Bear. They got Laser Bear. See, the Pac-12 was so much better with this.
Yeah. There weren't as much random men.
Yeah, there's a lot of dudes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, those Illini, I don't know, with the bow and arrow, maybe they keep everyone at bay. I'm not sure, you know?
It's hard to know. You know, I think we got to test this out, obviously. You know what we should do? We should burn down a couple of forests in the Amazon and have AI generate this for us.
Oh.
These competitions.
I like that.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of fun. The Pac-12, when you have, like, first of all, you got a Sun Devil. You have, like, this, like, no one's beating a Sun Devil at anything, right? Like, that's going to win almost anything. And we had Buffaloes. Like, come on. So the mascot game in the Big Ten is what maybe the most disappointing aspect of the whole thing. It's really hard to do these kind of experiments.
True.
But I like that AI could do it.
Yeah.
Have you used, like, do you use ChatGPT or anything? Like, I've not.
No.
I've done nothing with
that. No.
Zero.
No.
Do you think we could use it to write, like, the show notes and stuff?
Why?
I don't know.
Like, here's the thing, and I mean this in all, like, with all respect. If you are a person who makes your living with your brain and your ability to write things and create things and do all that, why would you ever choose to use an AI tool? Because all you are doing is more than likely improving its ability to replace you. And unless you haven't noticed, our society is not interested in creating a social safety net or a UBI. So if you are replaced, you just won't have a job anymore. So that's one. Two, it's still really shitty. Like, when I see the results from a lot of this stuff, it's still very bad. Like, I've seen a lot of people do that thing where you can create a podcast based off of a meeting or based off of Like, it'll give you like a 10-minute podcast of these two people talking, and they're
really
chatting about it. And it's like a great way to consume this content. And it's unspeakably shitty.
Oh, okay. Like, sorry, Griffin.
And it's just, I don't know. I mean, I think it's people who just like, they think it's cool or whatever.
Yeah.
And I do understand at a certain level that ChatGPT may actually be a better search engine at this point than Google. But that's because Google has ruined itself mainly because of its AI. Like, it has made itself much worse to push its AI tool at the top. I think what we're seeing with a lot of this stuff is the effect of marketing. People constantly hear about AI tools and then they want to use them. And the reason they hear about them constantly is because every company in the known universe has spent millions and billions of dollars developing their AI tools, and now they need people to use them. But it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's not really AI. We keep calling it that.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah, no, it's not.
It's just something that learned the language and now is regurgitating it, and often incorrectly. Just do stuff yourself. It'll be better for your brain.
Yeah.
Like, the last thing we need, and like, I'm preaching a little bit here, but the reality is I do the same stuff with like Google and all that kind of stuff. But the last thing we need to do is offload more of our brain stuff to a computer. We need to be using our brains more. There's a reason people are getting dumber, and it's because we have too many crutches.
Oops, sorry.
Like, your memory sucks. Why? Because you can look anything up that you need to. Your brain is like it's this remarkable thing that will be very lazy if you allow it to be. And I don't know. It's hopeless. But I can't get into it like from a principle standpoint. And then I'm also like, I don't want to learn a new thing. Like, I say that, and I realize the irony of saying that when I'm saying like we're making our brains lazy. But I don't want to learn how to, like, there are people who are ChatGPT proponents and say, oh, if you're getting bad results, it's all about how you write the query or whatever. And I'm like, why in the hell would I learn how to do that? Like, why do I need to know how to do that? Why don't I just learn how to do the thing that I want to do instead of having a stupid computer do it?
Yes.
A stupid computer where I need to learn an insane amount of things just to be able to write things to the stupid computer to do the thing that I want to do in the first place? Like, what are the barriers to entry here, and why? Why can't I just write the thing? Yeah. I'm a pretty fast writer. Am I as fast as the stupid computer? No. But am I going to trust its results well enough to not have to edit the hell out of the thing? Probably not.
I was talking to my mom yesterday, helping her book a flight. And she was having problems. So I was doing it for her. And I'm like, and it comes, you know, putting her info in there. I'm like, what's your phone number? And I'm like, I don't know my mom's phone number, which is weird. And I don't know if you're of the age, like when I was a kid, yeah, you remembered all these phone numbers. And I still remember like our home phone number, but yeah, I don't know, since I've moved out here and then my mom got a cell phone, she's had the same number for 25 years or something probably, but I don't know what the number is because you don't have to remember it anymore. It's in your phone. And I'm like, I don't know my mom's phone number. And she doesn't know mine either, you know, but I knew the home number, like I would, when I used to just call that. But yeah, there's all this stuff you used to have to remember and you don't anymore.
Yeah, it's a lot of the stuff has just gotten too easy. And it's not like we're trading it off and like, no, we're going to do these other different things with our brains. No, because we're not using our brains for all of these things, and because we have this incredible crutch and this tool called the internet and all this other stuff, we use our brains to earmuffs Griffin to basically just jerk off, like, and not in like a function, like not in a literal way, but like just to like entertain ourselves,
watch reality TV.
Yeah. And it's just like like the movie WALL-E, the Pixar film, it's like, you know, I haven't seen that movie in probably 15 years or whenever it first came out, but there's this great thing of like all these humans that came from this destroyed Earth. And they're all just like locked into a spaceship, just entertaining themselves in perpetuity and getting hugely fat and all this kind of stuff. And it's just, that's where we are. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just pure, you know, We're just continuing down that, just making the tools around us so much better that we don't have to do anything.
Crazy. All right. We got a football podcast question from Keon.
Oh, wow. Weird.
Yeah.
Do we cover football?
In ACC country, which is the Bay Area. Last week, Ryan made it clear that he wanted to see more basketball questions now that football season is mercifully over. I'm happy to oblige with a basketball question for each of you. Dave, how would you group the Big Ten men's basketball programs into tiers? I'm not necessarily talking about historical performance, but maybe what you would project to be each team's relative performance in the next four seasons. Who's in the top tier, the next tier down, etc.?
Wow. Okay. Well, I think there's a tier of contenders, like on a regular basis, and that's going to include your Michigan States, your Purdue's. Let's throw Michigan in there. Let's throw UCLA in there. You could talk me into Ohio State. Could talk me into Oregon. Then you'll have your quality teams. That's probably your Wisconsin, your Maryland.
Indiana?
Maybe. Woodson's such a bad coach.
Is USC in there? They just beat Michigan State.
Yeah, Musselman's a good coach, so I'll put him in there. And then you got the everyone else. But I think it's a pretty robust,
top half of the league.
Yeah, compared to the Pac-12, because the Pac-12, especially at the end in basketball, was basically just like a couple of teams. I think the Big Ten, it's just a much tougher top. I think the bottom is still, I think it gets highly rated because KenPom is, it's a very good system, but in some ways it's broken with how incestuous conference like games make it so that a team like Minnesota, which is, I would say, pretty bad, look a lot better than they are from a rating standpoint.
Illinois, Maryland, are they in, or either one?
Yeah, did I say Illinois at the top? Because they're definitely in the top tier of contenders.
Oh, you meant them. Okay.
Yeah. If I didn't say them. I would say Maryland is in the next rung down, but okay. I do like their coach. But anyway, I would say it's definitely a much tougher top half of the league than the Pac-12 used to have.
All right. It says, Ryan, in basketball, teams usually go on the road for two geographically paired road games, RIP Pac-12, and your beautifully, perfectly balanced pairings. How would you rank the following, quote, road trips in terms of recreational vacations to eat food and drink beer in a new place? So he's going to give me some road trips. L.A., he said, pretend it's a vacation. I mean, I love it here. I would put that pretty high up there. Seattle, Eugene. Again, I enjoy the Pacific Northwest road trip. That's a very good one. Nebraska, Iowa. He said, sorry, I can't be bothered to look up the names of those Midwestern towns. I've been to both. It wouldn't be on my list of places that I would want to go for, like, but, it's cool if you go. Like, I'm someone that goes and I'd be happy, but it wouldn't be, like, planned to go there or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, Minnesota. I spent a bunch of time in Minnesota. Enjoy. I have friends there and stuff. So that would probably, influence my decision a little bit. It depends what type of year too. Illinois, Northwestern. I mean, I love going to Chicago. I love eating deep dish pizza. So that's a good one there. Indiana, Purdue would probably be lower. I've not been to West Lafayette, but a buddy went to college there and did his master's there and wasn't a huge fan. I haven't been to Bloomington. Have you been to Bloomington?
No.
Michigan State, again, Detroit is whatever. But I got to see the Big House for the first time this year. That was cool. I haven't been to Spartyville yet. So East Lansing is on the list. We'll see. Hopefully one of these days. Ohio State, Penn State. I mean, I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, but Penn State's like in the middle of nowhere. Columbus is cool though. It's a city. It's like kind of Austin-y, right? Like it's a city with a big college in it. And then Rutgers, Maryland. Yeah, man. DC, New York. My sister lives in that area. That's a cool one too.
All right. So rank them instead of just saying every place is great.
I didn't say every place was great. Like where I'd want to go?
Yes.
Okay.
In order.
Probably go LA. One. Uh-huh. Maybe Rutgers, Maryland, two.
Got it. Coastal Elite. Keep going.
Keep with the coastal theme. Seattle, Eugene.
Uh-huh. Coastal Elite.
Illinois, Northwestern.
Got it. Yeah. Nothing but big cities. I hear you.
I like what I like. I'll throw Wisconsin, Minnesota in there.
Damn. Look at you branching out into, what is that, Minneapolis and Madison?
Yeah. Ohio State, Penn State.
Uh-huh.
Michigan, Michigan State.
Uh-huh.
Nebraska, Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And then Indiana, Purdue.
Wow.
Is that
Sorry
bad?
About that, Indiana, Purdue.
Sorry.
What a dick. All right. This is from, nope, that's a spam.
Oh, I do have some questions in the chat.
Well, I have some more email questions.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
I thought we did. Oh, we got more new ones came in. Okay.
You don't refresh your email. Dave Dave says, we beat Illinois. It's a status update. How much hotter will the rivalry get? And it is UW has announced Robert J. Jones as the new president of the university, and he was previously at Illinois. So, yeah, that rivalry is heating up.
Nice. Okay, and we got Paul Webfoot about Matt Rhule. Hello, champions. Just a quick thought about Matt Rhule's paranoia around the spring game. Maybe instead of canceling the spring game, he should cancel all of spring training to really make sure no one can scout his team. Better safe than sorry.
Frankly, what I think he should do is cut everyone on the team and don't have a season and end Nebraska football, because that's the only way to prevent people from tampering and seeing all of his intricate schemes.
Fair point.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the paranoia is a little much. But
we must destroy this village in order to save it.
Yes. Matthew in the chat says, David, what do you think about Charles Edward becoming the highest paid coordinator in the NFL? That's Chip Kelly.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
All right. Alex wants to know, how tall is Mara today?
He remains 7'3". Thank you for asking, Alex. He is still 7'3". His reach is still somewhere into the high heavens, and he can still dunk a basketball without jumping. I will keep you updated as the situation develops.
Very good. And then we have one last one from Andrew. Way too early, Big Ten power rankings, please.
No, we can't. And like that's not just us begging off. You literally have no idea what the rosters are going to look like. Like, we need to see through the end of spring before we can really do any of that justice.
Yeah. It's fun. I was listening to Andy and Ari, and they were doing their 2025 playoff brackets in February. Like, what the hell? Yeah, like, it's like a joke, but it is kind of funny. We can do stuff like that, but I don't know right now. Like, we still got a portal window open. Spring ball hasn't even started yet. Let's get some hype from spring football. I know David's going to watch all the spring games except for Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have a couple of Twitter questions.
Oh, okay.
This is Alex Avalar PW. It's the end of year one and the big yawn, 10. Scale of 1 to 10, how bad was it for the individual Pac-12 teams, Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA?
Like individually or like as a collective are we talking? Like
Oregon, it was a 1 bad. It was a 10 good. Individually.
Okay, for each school.
Yeah.
I mean, Oregon's, you got it, it's like 9 or 10. Like, you won the conference, right? Like, yeah. I mean,
it's a 9 or 10 good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 1 bad. Scale of 1 to 10, how bad was it?
Oh, how bad?
Yeah, a 1. It was a 1.
It wasn't very bad.
It was a 1 bad.
Okay.
For Washington, I would say it was a 7 bad.
Yeah, I think that's probably
for fair. USC. But
they were rebuilding.
For USC, it was a 10 bad.
They won the SEC. They went 2-0 in the SEC.
For USC, it was this level of bad. If they had the money, they would have fired their head coach.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. For UCLA, I would say it was like a 7 bad.
Yeah.
But in an objective sense, it was a 10 bad for all of them because they would have done better in a Pac-12. Go Bruins. All right. I think that's it.
All right.
Cool. Oh, wait, no. There's one from AGJ2114. What is your reaction with media opinion holding Deion in the conversation of ranking near or even par with Riley, strictly looking at this year's coaching rankings and also obviously better than UCLA's coach?
I mean,
I'm not fully understanding the question, but Deion Sanders being on par with Lincoln Riley, I would say is somewhat of an insult to Deion Sanders.
Yeah, no, I mean, what he's been able to do, and there was a lot of question if he was going to stick around. He stayed. A lot of question about how he was building his roster. It's not conventional, but it's kind of working. He's shown a lot in the first few years, I think. And I think a lot of people were questioning it. And we'll see how he does with, you know, his superstars gone. Riley has more historical success, but in the last 3 years, like, Deion's been the better coach for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
Are you surprised that Deion's still around?
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised, too.
Yeah. I would say I was pretty high on Deion entering Colorado. I didn't love the way the transition worked.
No.
Not the cutting guys, but the reports about how the cuts happened.
Yes.
And then the first year, I thought, you know, obviously started strong and then ended supremely disappointingly. And I didn't love the decisions at offensive coordinator, getting rid of Sean Lewis, demoting him initially, all that kind of stuff. This year was really surprising for me. Like that they, and also they didn't look great to start the year. And then suddenly they were rolling. Good adjustments were made.
Yeah.
The line play improved. I don't know. I think he's a good coach. I think he has some chops, and I think people still get kind of caught up in the flash element and all that, you know, the hullabaloo surrounding it. But the reality is I think he's a pretty good coach and pretty good motivator.
I think when he first got hired, there were haters for sure. And we were like, no, I think that's going to work. We were like high on him. Then we sort of saw what was happening. We were like, I don't know. I'm not sure this is going to work. And then the haters were just like more hate and stuff. And then he starts off good and then shits the bed, Sarah Griffin, the rest of the year. And this past, you know, season was very good. And, you know, Heisman winner and all that. But it was, to me, it was about, does he stay? Is he just going to be there, bring in a bunch of transfers, prop up his kids and Travis Hunter, and then just bail? But he's sticking around. So I think now we have an opportunity to like build a program where before it just felt like you were sort of, you know, trying to make something happen fast. Yeah, we'll see. He's got some good coaching qualities, you know. So the fact that he's going to stick around and stay in Boulder, I think it's great for the sport. And see what he does. It'd be great if he was in the conference we were covering, but
yeah, for
we
sure.
Still talk about him every once in a while. All righty, well that's going to wrap it up. If you're watching, I'm going to put a picture of Dan Lennox smoking a cigar on your screen. We love doing this. So send us questions, send us topics, whatever we can do in this off season, because it's going to be long. It's going to be cold. It's going to be rainy here in LA this week. Come on. It's probably snowing a lot of places we go to, but everyone set your time, West Coast time, get on board. We're here. Cover the Big Ten throughout the off season. But for David Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you enjoy the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.